hey, there's guys in baseball uniforms throwing and catching baseballs at baseball facilities in baseball areas. It's baseball season.
I don't believe you.
It is, I swear, the Diamondbacks, they all walked through a slaughterhouse.
What?
According to their pants.
Those things? It seriously looks like they just waded through the elevator from The Shining.
Exactly what it looks like. It's exactly what it looks like. It
they
is terrifying.
They were standing
terrifying.
On the 13th floor at the hotel. The elevator doors opened up. The blood came pouring out, and they were just sat there at the end of the hallway. And the blood just eventually got down to the bottoms of their pants, and they weren't wearing high waters, and so nothing was coming up Milhouse.
We've had many conversations about how the Rockies need a new look, and somebody got on us a couple weeks ago, look at all the rebrands. All the rebrands suck. Well, you're not contractually obligated to go through a terrible rebrand before you go through a good one, but the Diamondbacks, man, they went the bad route. Holy cow. You know, like you look at what the Astros did or what the Blue Jays did, like those are really good refreshed looks. The Diamondbacks, holy crap. What is this?
I'm not sure they could have swung and missed more.
Yeah, I don't know.
And
by
the way, I didn't even notice the bottoms of the pants.
Oh, yeah. Like, Yeah. I don't think anybody had really figured out how bad those were going to look until today. Steve Gilbert, the Diamondbacks writer for MLB.com, tweeted a picture of some of the guys throwing off the mounds at Salt River Fields a talking stick. And it really does look like, I think this is Brad Ziegler who's throwing. It really looks like Brad Ziegler has just been walking through shin deep puddles of blood. It's all splattered and red and brownish and gross.
Why?
Hey, by the way, hey. It's episode number 65 of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast. Hi, everyone. I'm Tyler Vaughn.
And I'm Anthony Masterson.
And Laika the dog is here as well. She's hanging out next to me. She wanted to be on the podcast. The official,
who's a good dog?
The official mascot of the Purple Dinosaur Podcast.
Laika the one-eyed dog. And Rockies are undefeated since you got that
dog.
Yeah,
that's true. This dog is undefeated. Everybody in this town who matters. I don't keep tabs on the other two. No, I do. Nuggets almost got Blake Griffin, kind of.
Yeah,
that was fun for
why?
A second. so we could punch people out in town. It'd be sweet.
That's true.
So yeah, hey, welcome in. Episode number 65. Been a couple weeks since our last one. Got some good stuff coming up on the show today. As always, you can find the Purple Dinosaur Podcast on iTunes, on the Stitcher app. We have an RSS feed via our Twitter profile. You can also find us at purpleroad.com. Give us a rating and a review and a subscription and all that kind of stuff. We're going to have a whole pile of fun today. Mike Petriello from MLB.com will join the show. The former Fangraphs star now over at MLB.com. He's doing the StatCast podcast, doing a ton of phenomenal work over there. Really, really interesting interview that he had with Jeff Breidich a couple of weeks ago on the StatCast podcast, which I really recommend you go listen to probably before you even listen to our interview with Mike, but that'll be coming up soon. It's going to be a weird one. We're going to have to record that with me sitting at DIA today because I'm the radio voice of the University of Denver's lacrosse team. I don't know if anybody knew that, but this year, for the first time, they're sending me on road trips, which is cool. So we're going to Atlanta today. They play Duke Saturday in Kennesaw, Georgia. And so I'm flying today and we're trying to get Mike set up for some time early. Mike's got a newborn, so we had to plan it around nap time for the newborn, which I totally understand. So we're going to record this part and then we're going to talk to Mike a little bit later on. But I'm excited to talk to Mike. Who's up this week, episode number 65?
I've heard Duke lacrosse has some interesting foibles in their history.
I'm apparently staying at the same hotel as them. That should be interesting.
Yeah, have fun with that one. Anyway, number 65, the lone number 65 in Rockies history, one Jason Isidore Gurka.
Isidore.
Isidore, middle name. That's Gurka cool. Appeared in 9 games last year for the Rockies at an ERA of 9.39. That's not a joke. But he also is listed on Baseball Reference as pitcher and right fielder because he played the outfield in that bizarre late inning 48 inning affair with the Doyers back in September.
Yeah, I remember that.
That was fun because I was still stuck at work. We had to wait till the game ended.
Those games are always great in the doldrums of a season where you're not contending.
I
don't know, you guys just play 1,000 games, 1,000 innings each. How about
the good part of that game was that besides the Rockies winning that game was that we got our cover photo of Nolan telling the 18 Doyers fans that were still in the stadium to shut the hell up. So
that is true. By the way, Jason Gurka, not good at the major league level last year, but was 27, finally made his major league debut. He's a really, really cool story. Kicked around the Orioles system for a long time. Last year kind of came in as a flyer with the Rockies. I named him an organization all-star for MILB.com, which is based not on prospect status or age or anything like that, but strictly on performance. Because last year, between AA New Britain and AAA Albuquerque, 35 appearances, 5-1 record, 2.86 ERA, a whip of 1.222. He was very, very good last year in the minors. Not so much in the big leagues.
I want to point out that his ERA was 9.39, but his fielding independent pitching was 3.79.
Yeah!
Which is absurd.
How does that happen?
It doesn't make any sense. It was almost 6 full runs lower.
Oh, the Rocks. So let's dive into episode number 65 of this Rockies podcast, which will talk a lot of things that are Rockies, but some stuff that is not Rockies today. And we're going to start off with one that will impact you as a fan. But
we're
going to
talk about the D-backs so far.
Yeah, well, yeah, we've been the D-backs slaughter pants. Major League Baseball Advanced Media recently reached a legal settlement in a case brought against them, a class action lawsuit in federal court regarding broadcast rights, territorial restrictions, streaming capacities, all that kind of stuff. Here, we're going to try to parse this a little bit for you and explain to you what this means. Major League Baseball was sued similarly to the way that the National Hockey League had been sued and also reached a settlement. And this is basically kind of to strike down these archaic, the territorial rights, the broadcast rights for certain teams and certain markets. There are various cities and states across the country that are in the restricted area of broadcast rights for like 9 different teams. I remember
Iowa's really bad.
Yeah, Iowa's bad. Nevada's really bad.
Yeah.
The Carolinas are really bad. I remember being in Winston-Salem in 2011 on a road trip, and James Smythe, friend of the podcast, James was trying, a big Yankees fan, he's from New York, was trying to watch a Yankees-Orioles game, and in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, we were in the Baltimore Orioles broadcast territory, so it was blacked out on MLB TV. Ugh. Okay, sure. So basically, here's what it means for you. Major League Baseball will offer for the 2016 season in-market streaming to fans outside of the MLB TV package. That is for out-of-market games. So you can, theoretically now, stream Rockies games in Denver. That's the good side. The bad side is a little bit more complicated. You can't just buy it standalone. You have to authenticate with a cable or satellite television provider. The reason for this model, and this is according to Maury Brown of Forbes.com, is that it, quote, centers on the large sums that the networks are paying for local and regional media rights from the individual companies. To recoup that, fees are passed on to the cable and satellite carriers and eventually down to you, the fan, in your bill. This is modeled on what the NHL did in their settlement. As of right now, as it looks, the single-team in-market streaming packages will be $84.99 for the season, which is pretty damn good. I mean, that's 50 cents a game.
Yeah.
The cost of the MLB TV premium package will also be lowered as part of the settlement from $129.99 to $109.99. There are also, if you subscribe to MLB TV over the last handful of seasons, you've been getting emails in recent weeks sort of explaining what all this means. The bad side of this, the downside of this for the Rockies is that Root Sports, of course, is not in on this deal. Major League Baseball has actually...
I'm sure they're going to be negotiating.
Eventually, they've got to be talking to Root Sports. And Root Sports isn't just a Colorado thing. There's Root Sports Northwest, and there's also Root Sports Pittsburgh. So it's not just
and,
a Rockies
Houston
problem.
And Houston now, too.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because CSN Houston was... That went well.
That was a terrifying disaster.
So as of right now, or at least as of about the turn of the year when this all started coming about, there were 15 teams that had struck a deal for in-market streaming for 2016. Those are teams that broadcast on Fox-owned cable affiliates.
Yeah, that's right.
Other than that, everybody else is sort of out of the lurch.
Dragging their feet, at the very least.
Right. So right now, we don't really know how this will affect you as a Rockies fan. What it does do, if you're a cord cutter, if you know somebody who has Comcast, who has CenturyLink, who has DirecTV, whatever, get their login information. You can sign up for the package, authenticate with that, and presumably watch market games in market.
Which would be cool.
Which is cool. Yeah,
the whole blackout thing is it's absurd in so many ways. I get it to a certain extent why corporations need to do it, but man, it sucks for just the casual fan who wants to watch the Rockies games. I got a couple of friends in Denver, big Rockies fans, but they just decided to go away from cable or DirecTV or whatever a couple years ago. And they don't have a choice right now besides just going to the games, which is great, but they can't go to every game.
Right.
You know, but you want to be able to watch and be a
people
fan.
People have
you
lives.
Unless you're going to a bar every night, which also isn't really that feasible either. So the sooner they get this thing done and ironed out, the better, because it's just not good for casual baseball fans right now, and baseball needs as many casual fans as they can possibly get.
So anyway, keep an eye on that. I mean, it's an interesting story, and it will eventually – I think this is kind of the slippery slope as to what the next chapter is really going to look like and how we consume not just baseball games, but really sports at large and television at large. There's an interesting story up – when is there not an interesting story up at Hardball Talk from Craig Calcaterra? And the headline is, "Does Baseball Have a Plan for Life After Cable?" The reason that everything is so expensive for your television package is basically ESPN. Yes. Sports networks negotiate outlandishly large contracts, and somebody's got to pay for that. So cable subscribers pay for that. So I think, I mean, there have been studies done that out of the bills that Americans pay for cable, something like 80% of that money goes to sports networks or something ridiculous.
It's absurd that if people who don't even watch sports and they get DirecTV or whatever, like it's something like 30 or 35% of their bill comes just from ESPN. Even if they don't watch it at all.
It's ridiculous.
There's no a la carte, anything right. like that anymore. That's where they're starting to get to see that now, though. But if that's got to be the next step, and whoever's going to be the innovators in that are going to be the ones who come through the other side. We saw that kind of with newspapers and the internet. And newspapers didn't jump on it. They didn't try. And look what happened to newspapers. If
now we have to
cable companies want
to
get on it and other platforms want to get on it, the leagues want to get ahead of the game on that, as they should be trying to do, then they're going to be the ones that will be successful once the whole bubble bursts.
Here's what I will say. MLB Advanced Media has been so far ahead of the game for so long. They make what the NFL and the NBA do. They make it look like
it's laughable.
Kids are out, right, exactly, drawing stuff on a sidewalk with chalk, and MLB Advanced Media is, you know, building the space shuttle. So I would assume, and this is kind of Craig Calcaterra's point, they probably have a plan at some point to figure out what is going to happen once the cable model, the current cable model, falls apart, which I think it's inevitably destined to do. There's been even legislation proposed at times. John McCain, I know, attempted to introduce some legislation in order to force cable companies basically to provide a la carte programming, where you could select what you wanted. I want this movie channel. I want this news channel. I want ESPN. I don't want ESPN, whatever it is.
Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly, which would be awesome.
It's so easy.
It's the money doesn't go that way.
I want Home and Garden television.
God knows, in American politics, no matter what,
watch Chopped.
It's only where the money goes. I want to watch Tiny Bachelor House.
Tiny Bachelor?
This is all I know. I assume that's something that Craig Goldstein watches.
Is that Tiny
House? It's just a combination of everything that Craig likes. It's very small people, and they're handing out roses.
Okay.
Inside house.
Just like on the street to other people?
I think
by.
So. Probably.
Okay.
We'll see if Craig can enlighten us on that.
Got it.
Hopefully that makes some sense. I don't know. I'm not, what's the word, smart. So it's tough nail down all the things. Smart. S-M-R-T.
Okay. I mean, S-M-A-R-T.
So let's talk some baseball.
Hey.
Anthony, your Colorado Rockies made a huge signing this week. Former first-round pick Chris Nelson is back.
I didn't even know that.
Yay! Woo! Chris Nelson.
Is he really?
Yeah, Chris Nelson. Minor league deal. Don't ever forget, though, Chris Nelson was one time a top 10 overall pick.
Yes, he was.
So he's back. He had that one big steal of home. That's great.
That was cool.
2009, that was September 9th. No, 2010, that was when everything was falling apart.
We were in Myrtle.
In 2010. Yeah, we were in Myrtle. I remember where I was watching that.
That was prior to when it all was falling apart. That was when it was all going well, if
yeah.
I remember.
Yeah, that's true. That was when it really looked like they were...
Yeah, that was in August of that year, I think.
September 9th.
Oh, close enough. It was before it all went to hell.
Let's see what they were on September 9th of 2010. And
so
then where
bad.
They finished. So yeah, Chris Nelson is back. Get excited. By the way, the Rockies on September 9th of 2010, things were going pretty well. Our team was 76-64 and then finished 83-79. Womp, 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 womp.
Oh,
God. September that year was brutal.
Let's not talk about that.
So anyway.
Interesting article that.
Yes.
Good friend.
Not about Chris Nelson.
Friend of Anthony Masterson, Ken Rosenthal.
I met Ken Rosenthal last year, too. How nice is that dude?
It's actually not true, but he is a very nice
person.
He's
awesome.
I have worked with him a few times. He is a very, very nice, very great at his job human being. He had a great article on or the other day about how the Rockies, considering the whole uncertainty surrounding a suspension or whether it be team imposed or MLB imposed to Jose Reyes, considering his domestic violence issue that he had last October, if he does get suspended, and obviously as this person is still a free agent, why wouldn't the Rockies look into signing former National shortstop Ian Desmond? And the at first glance, you say, why would they want to do that? They have Trevor Story, they have Christian Adames, they still have Jose Reyes under contract. But here is what Rosenthal was thinking. And I can't say for certain whether I would agree with this or not. I'm not a huge Ian Desmond guy right now, considering he's been trending downward offensively for each of the last 3 to 4 years. But the crux of Rosenthal's argument was that it would be, at this point, it's already going to the end of February, and he's still a free agent, so he's not going to have a ton of leverage. The Rockies wouldn't need to give up their first-round draft pick, considering Ian Desmond is tied to that the qualifying offer thing. So the Rockies' top five pick, which is number 4 right now, is protected. So the pick they would have to give up would be their supplemental pick at number 38, I believe. So it wouldn't be a – yeah, number 38. So it wouldn't be this – you know, top 10 pick or anything like that. At this point, they could probably get him on a 1 to 2 year deal worth maybe $12 to $20 million is what
$12 to $20. I would be $20. Down with. I'd be down with that signing.
His stock has fallen far, but not that far.
We'll give you a 20, Ian. What do you say?
Deal. So, you know, 1 to 2 years, $12 to $20 million. And at this point, depending on how you view Trevor Story, whether you see him as the shortstop of the future or just a super utility guy, I'm not really sure how the Rockies view him yet. Christian Adames, the same way. Not sure how you see him fitting into the major league team. Basically, what Rosenthal's arguing was that it could bridge the gap. If you get a two-year deal for Desmond, let's say, a two-year deal, bridge the gap between Troy Tulowitzki and by the time Brendan Rodgers, who was the first-round pick last year of the Rockies, is ready to come up and contribute, or at least close to contributing, to the big league club.
Yeah. There's a lot of question marks here.
There's a lot of question marks there, and a lot of things he brought up. He didn't have any inside source. He didn't say, like, oh, my sources tell me that this has been happening. No, he just said, why aren't the Rockies looking at this? Because he thinks it'd be a good fit. And, you know, he cited the how Desmond has just destroyed the Rockies in his career. It's like, well, yeah, but
so is everybody else.
Yeah, and that's the thing. That's my favorite thing when someone's talking about, oh, well, he should join the Rockies. He's always killed them in his career. Yeah, Ian Desmond's hit .407 with an OPS near 1,100 in 92 plate appearances at Coors Field. Mind you, that was against Rockies pitching.
I was going to say it, right. People like, know he's not going to be facing Rockies pitching,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly, yeah. And like, same with Gerardo Parra. It was the same difference. Like, oh, he's always killed the Rockies. Like, well, yeah, but he's not going to be facing the Rockies anymore if you sign him for the Rockies. But anyway, what are your thoughts on this whole Ian Desmond situation?
By the way, according to Ken Rosenthal, and this was from 2 days ago, the 16th, quote, the Rockies have been in contact with Desmond's representatives, Major League sources say, but any pursuit of the shortstop likely will be linked to baseball's decision on Reyes, who would lose a prorated portion of his $22 million salary if he's suspended, unquote.
God,
so there is some conversation going on.
You're paying Jose Reyes $22 million this year.
$22 million.
Ugh, what a waste.
I don't know. A couple thoughts. I don't think that 2 years of Ian Desmond gets you to Brendan Rodgers. I do not think Brendan Rodgers is major league ready in 2 years.
Rodgers is still a child.
So does that mean you're hoping for 2 years of Ian Desmond to get you to Trevor Story or Christian Adames? And if so, why not just give them the shot right now? I guess the expenditure
the Story and or Adames are pretty much ready. Adames has spent time. Yeah. The big Story did a great job last year at AAA. He should be at least given a yeoman's chance.
Yeah. I think if I really had to pick a guy who would fit that role better right out of the gate, maybe it's Adames. But I don't really see why. I don't know. I guess the benefits of this don't vastly outweigh. If you throw Ian Desmond in there, is he going to be that much better? Are his WATS/CA, his wins over Trevor Story and Christian Adames, really going to be worth the money that you're spending?
You know, Tyler,
I
don't like these numbers that have permeated this game now.
Hey, the fun about baseball is not learning.
Ruin the game.
The fun of baseball is not learning.
Yeah, the fun of baseball is
that was the quote.
The fun of baseball is just to watch the game and never learn anything from it at all.
Oh God, that was John Feinstein last night on
and John Smoltz today.
Oh really? I didn't even hear about that.
Some good quotes that analytics are going to ruin the game, and won't somebody please God think of the children?
We should just be signing guys based on how many hot dogs they can eat and how much beer they can drink. It worked for Babe Ruth, right?
Yeah, why not? Why should anything have changed from 1911? Yeah,
no.
Baseball.
We still, you know, we use leeches in medicine stuff.
Yeah, it's true.
Why, you know, why would baseball progress at all? We still do the exact same things we did in the dead ball era across the rest of society.
Yeah, castor oil is a cure-all.
Yeah, totally, totally. I guess my feeling is Ian Desmond has been trending downward for quite some time.
It's been four straight years. His OPS declined from 845 in 2012 to 674 last year. The OBP has gone down as well, 335. He's never a good OBP guy, but 335 in 2012, 290 last year. It has not been going in the right direction. Before last year, he turned down a, what, $140-some million extension from the Nationals
because he wanted to go into a market.
He tried to pull a Max Scherzer and did the exact opposite.
Yeah. Garrett Atkins, more commonly to people here. His WAR has dropped from 3.6 in 2013. Last year was 2.0. That was the second worst mark or third worst mark of his career. Defensively, I mean, very adequate, very good over at shortstop. I just don't think that the expenditure right now is going to get you that much more. And that's in a vacuum. What I really don't get is nobody thinks this Rockies team is contending. And it was just a couple of months ago that Ken Rosenthal was the one saying this team needs to commit full on to a rebuild. So why go out and shell the money? Why go shell the money for a guy who's not going to, it's not like he's the missing piece and that's going to push him over the top.
And this is what Rosenthal even said in the article. It says, one thing we already know, the Rocks are not rebuilding. Not after acquiring reliever Jake McGee and signing free agent first baseman Mark Reynolds, outfielder Gerardo Parra, and relievers Jason Mott and Chad Qualls. He thinks that this means that those signings, that they're not trying to rebuild.
Okay, so his argument as well for Ian Desmond is, well, if you're not rebuilding, this is what you should do.
Why not?
I guess. Yeah. Which, you know, I guess that makes it a little bit more understandable. I just don't.
But it doesn't mean that it's accurate.
No, and it doesn't. And it doesn't mean that it's a smart move either. You know, and again, Jake McGee could be a huge trade piece come June and July. So I don't. I don't know. I don't think that what you're going to gain from plugging Ian Desmond in there is enough. More than what you'll get out of Trevor Story or Christian Adamas. And I could be wrong. I mean, Story and Adamas could come up. They could each hit $125 and get sent back to Albuquerque by the middle of April. I think there are going to be some struggles there, certainly, but I don't think that the money and losing the draft pick are worth, what is that going to push them from? 74 to 76 wins? 68 to 71 wins?
Yeah, maybe.
You know, I don't know. I don't think it's a smart move.
No, but you wonder how long he stays on the open market, how much longer the Rockies may start to think they should start kicking the tires on it.
Yeah, and that's true.
I mean, if he's there March 10th, you go, okay, well,
Steven
Ian,
Drew situation.
How about a one-year, $8 million deal? You go, okay, well.
Right.
I can see them doing that. I'm not saying they should. I'm saying I can see them doing that.
The other thing that's confusing is how long is Rob Manfred going to drag this out?
Yeah, I mean,
you know,
it's not good for the game that it's being tied to this draft pick compensation because there are some good players who are still unsigned strictly because of that. Dexter Fowler still unsigned, Ian Desmond, Giovanni Gallardo, guys who have done very well in the big leagues for a number of years are being screwed over by this system.
Doesn't seem good.
No.
And, you know, I mean, Aroldis Chapman is still kind of out there twisting in the wind as well. Now, what makes his case different is that Chapman was not charged with anything.
Oh, you mean the Jose Reyes, the domestic violence thing? Yes. Oh,
yeah.
I meant Chapman, the free agent qualifying.
Well, that too. Yeah. I mean, that's the crazy thing is you have all these guys, and we've seen this in recent seasons. I mean, Steven Drew is kind of the one who comes to mind. I think it took
Kendrys
until
Morales.
June for him to get signed. Kendrys Morales was another one. We've seen this happen now, and there is a CBA negotiation this year, I believe. So maybe this stuff comes up at that point. But, yeah, like at what point do you start making decisions on this stuff? And
yeah, I mean,
furthermore,
the domestic violence issue was put in last August.
Yes.
This new thing where it basically gave Rob Manfred Roger Goodell status. You can rule on players and suspend players even without any kind of conviction from the courts. And so if you screw up enough and it's a domestic violence issue, he can just step in and say, hey, you know, you're suspended. And it has not happened yet. The Ross Chapman thing, he wasn't charged, obviously, but clearly he unloaded a gun, what, 8 times into a garage? And
yeah, 8 shots.
Yeah.
At least.
And the Keystone cops in Miami did a great job of asking questions. Didn't even get, like, any any kind of names of anybody involved. They're just like, oh, it's fine, probably. We're in Miami.
This is, again, according to Craig Calcaterra of Hardball Talk. Quote, Major League Baseball, however, has made it clear that their new domestic violence policy sets forth a higher standard than that set by law enforcement, and it has entered into an agreement with its employees which allows it to impose discipline arising out of domestic violence situations, even if the employee is not charged with a crime. To that end, the league continues to investigate the Chapman case and may very well suspend Chapman. Now, the reason this is a story today is that Aroldis Chapman came out and said, basically, if he's suspended, no matter what, he's appealing it. Jose Reyes was actually the first player to have been involved in an incident after the policy was enacted. But Reyes's case is much different in that it is going to trial, so Major League Baseball could wait longer for him. So basically, it's just worst-case scenario for the Rockies that you have this toxic asset on your hands, to borrow a term from economics and Jose Reyes, but you don't really know how to handle it because you don't know what the superiors in this circumstance are going to be doing with it.
Right. And it's a huge step because whatever he rules first is going to be the precedent set for all the subsequent issues that come up in this situation. So it's not something to take lightly, of course. None of this is, obviously. But the first one that comes down, whether it's Chapman or Reyes or whoever, that's going to be one that everything else is based off of going forward. And so you can't mess it up, basically, like the same way the NFL has. The NFL has screwed it up so astronomically that you do not want to you do not want to be lumped in with those jugheads in the NFL.
According to Calcaterra, quote, this is a big, big moment for Rob Manfred. Punish Chapman heavily in order to send a message in an arbitration panel could undercut him. Think Roger Goodell. Punish Chapman too lightly and he runs the risk of appearing to be soft on domestic violence. All of this is magnified by the fact that Chapman is a superstar player on the league's marquee franchise, and it will be covered by more reporters than you can shake a stick at. So that's what really stands out right now. Jose Reyes, though, is the much more complicated situation because his is going to I don't know if I'd say more complicated from Manfred's position, but certainly for the Rockies, draws a far more muddied line than what's going on right now with Aroldis Chapman, because you don't have any idea, and maybe they do internally, maybe they know what the time frame is going to be like for this, but right now nobody seems to really know what's going on with that decision coming down.
Yeah, I mean, Reyes's actual court day is scheduled for opening day.
Right.
So we'll see what happens there. You have to imagine it's going to come down before then, right? I mean, and if you want to make a case, you would think he might go with Reyes first because this guy on the Rockies, like, nobody cares as much about that team. Right. They're going to be bad anyway. It's not Aroldis Chapman. And then he can see what the feelers out on the ruling that he made there with Reyes and then apply it to Chapman and see, because if you want to go chronologically, I think the Chapman and the Reyes thing both happened the exact same weekend, the Halloween weekend. So I don't know. But if he wants to do it that way, fine. But man, they got to get this done soon, because not only them, the Rockies need to make a choice. If they're comfortable with Story and Adames going in there instead, that's fine. And I think they should be, because I think those guys are about ready to contribute. But this is, it's a big, big elephant in the room right now for the Rockies, as the guys are about to report to Salt River Fields, for sure.
Going to be an interesting one to watch. One more piece that I want to plug before we get out of here and move on to Mike Petriello of MLB.com. My good pal Sam Dykstra at MILB.com has been doing a series of prospect projection stories on the site over the last 6 weeks, and just wrapped up with the National League West. The Rockies obviously included in that. And what Sam does for these is he takes all of the kind of the top major players among prospects in each organization and projects via the Steamer projections what a season could look like for them at the major league level. And there are some very interesting numbers that come out of this. Trevor Story and Christian Adames are both in this, and there is a projected slash line for Trevor Story in 600 plate appearances. That's the accounted amount for position players who aren't catchers for Steamer's projections. 600 plate appearances, 239, 307, 416, the projected slash line, with 16 homers, 15 stolen bases, a weighted on-base average of 313, and a 79 WRC plus. Christian Adames in 600 is projected to slash 278, 323, 375. His weighted on base average is lower. It's a 305, and his WRC plus is 74. But either of those guys, right now, Trevor Story, a projected WAR of 1.3 and Adama's 0.1, either of those guys right now, at 22 years old, just seems a lot more palatable to me than spending $12 to $20 million on somebody like Ian Desmond.
Yeah, I completely agree.
David Dahl also in there, Ryan McMahon, Forrest Wall. I mean, some of the younger guys, they're still given the projection of what it could look like if they're at the major league level. On the pitching side, some really encouraging numbers, I think, for John Gray and Jeff Hoffman, who are both projected to go 12 and 12 and 32 starts. Gray, an ERA of 4.20, Hoffman 4.55. But what I really like is the numbers that are projected for them as far as their FIP and their strikeouts per nine. For John Gray, it's 8.3 strikeouts per nine innings, a 2.8 WAR, and a FIP of 4.09. For Jeff Hoffman, 6.2 strikeouts per nine, 4.74 FIP, which is a little bit higher than his ERA, and a 1.1 WAR. I mean, those are numbers for guys who are pretty young, just starting to get a taste of the upper minors and Major League Baseball for Hoffman and Gray, respectively. Those numbers are pretty encouraging, and they take into account a lot. I mean, this isn't just somebody throwing numbers against a wall of, okay, here's what I think these guys will do. I mean, the steamer projections are pretty thorough.
Yeah, and Pecota actually has John Gray this year at a 4.08 ERA.
Yeah.
115.
Which is basically a Cy Young thing in Colorado.
Yeah, if you can do that, you're going to be in a lot of award candidates. It was the conversation at the end of the year. So they have him at 1.2 wins above replacement. They have Tyler Chatwood at the same spot, Jorge De La Rosa leading the team with a 1.3 wins above replacement for Baseball Prospectus. So the numbers out there for projecting John Gray this year, Jeff Hoppen, they're really not bad. So we'll see what happens when the innings actually start counting. But yeah, well, unless you're Keith Law. Unless you're Keith Law. And if you have any kind of different opinion on any kind of subject at all, you will receive the Lord of Snark. So it's not even worth it.
Yeah, no. By the way, according to Sam, quote, John Gray's stuff has looked better than his results at almost every stop since he was drafted third overall in 2013. But because his peripherals also have looked better, Steamer likes his chances to perform at or near the top of the Rockies rotation this season. So just keep that in mind going forward. There's a lot of good stuff in there about Trevor Story, a lot of good stuff about Adames, and some more talk about the other top 100 guys, Wall, McMahon, the lower levels of the minors. I guess you can't really say that about McMahon. He's going to start this year more than likely in Hartford where the yard goes. So, yeah, good start. Good start to this podcast. Coming up next, really excited to talk to Mike Petriello of MLB.com, who's one of the guys who has long been fascinated with how you try to build a winner at Coors Field and in Colorado. Really interesting conversation he had a couple of weeks ago with Jeff Breidich about what it's like trying to do it from the inside. We're going to talk with Mike about some of his thoughts and theories about the way that this team is being built and what it means for you as a fan going forward. Mike Petriello joins the show next. We are super excited. The 65th edition of the Purple Dinosaur podcast. We're going national for this one and bringing in Mike Petriello of MLB.com and one of the stars of the baseball world that you've been reading for a very, very long time. And I think it's probably safe to say has one of the bigger fascinations among national media guys with what exactly it takes to be successful at Coors Field. Mike, would I be somewhat correct in stating that? And welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us. We're really excited to have you.
Absolutely. You'd be 100% correct. If I could, I would write about Coors Field every day of the week, but then I wouldn't have a job after like 2 weeks. But yes, I love it.
So let's dive into this with one of the really interesting stories that you came out with this offseason, which was examining what really truly is the Coors Field effect. And this is a story that you wrote really kind of using Carlos Gonzalez and some of the more long-term guys who have been either members of the Rockies and have moved on, or a good case studies for what Coors Field does to a player at home and on the road. And what I find really fascinating, what I think is kind of your thesis, is that it's not just that Coors Field inflates home stats. It also hampers Rockies hitters when they go on the road. Give us kind of the synopsis behind the Coors Field theory, what this effect is.
Yeah, I mean, if there's one thing that everybody should know about it, this is some numbers I put out. If you look at over the last 10 years, the Rockies at home, number one team in baseball in run scoring, as you'd expect, as everybody would expect. Rockies on the road, dead last in run scoring by a lot. You know, there's like a 1,500 run difference between them at home and them on the road over the last 10 years. So you can have two takeaways from that. You can either say that the Rockies are the true talent, worst hitting team in baseball, and Coors Field is so magical it makes them look like the best team in baseball, or far more likely, in my opinion, they're kind of middle of the pack and Coors Field helps them at home, and then it also hurts them on the road. And I think that's more likely, and I think that's what gets missed when people look at, you know, trade candidates and just look at their road stats and say, well, that's the player he is. And I don't really think that's true.
And you used StatCast a lot to deal with that. And that's one of your big things that you do, the StatCast podcast on MLB.com. And it's just a phenomenal a tool that MLB really kind of started last year. Is going to get a lot better going on in the years ahead. But you said StatCast where actually Carlos Gonzalez hit the ball harder away from Coors Field than he did at home. But also the biggest thing was that you usually use was the fact that the pitch selection's different at Coors Field.
You're right. He did hit the ball harder on the road, and that's important. I think the thing is, one thing exit velocity can't measure is what happens when you don't hit the ball. And so a lot of these guys have a higher strikeout rate on the road, and I think that goes back to your point about fastballs, because you're right that pitchers come into Coors Field, they don't trust their breaking stuff, they throw more fastballs, and hitters know that. So they're going to be more aggressive, they're going to go after that fastball, and then they go on the road, and maybe they take that aggressiveness with them, or you know they're not used to the breaking pitches, so they actually strike out more, and I think that's kind of the counterbalance. He hits the ball harder, but they strike out more, and that sort of hurts them on the road, too.
Mike, when you look at guys like Carlos Gonzalez, guys like Troy Tulowitzki, some of the really elite hitters, I mean, obviously we know how good they are at Coors Field. We know that they can be very, very good on the road. But the way that you construct a roster here is obviously a lot more challenging than what you do elsewhere, because you have to take a lot of that into account. And your interview with Jeff Breidich is really what kind of pushed us into trying to get you on the show, because it was so interesting not only listening to you bounce questions off of Jeff, but to listen to his responses, because they're so different from what we've heard in the past. So my question to you is, do you think that the Coors Field effect has been overblown in the past? And maybe if you want to go kind of full tinfoil hat from our perspective or the perspective of this market, has it been used to sort of justify inaction from time to time from the Rockies front office? I mean, do you feel like it's, I don't want to say it's easy to build a winner here, but do you feel like maybe there has been, to an extent, a mountain made out of a molehill in what this problem is in trying to construct a good team?
I think it's just no one's ever really done this before up until, you know, the last 20 years. So there's been a lot of different ways to approach it. Maybe it's sinker ballers. Maybe it's this. Maybe it's that. I know that the Rockies have taken a lot of heat for their winner. And I can't say I supported all the moves. I didn't love the McGee for Dickerson move. But what I will say is to say they don't have a plan, I can't buy into that, because there are obviously very smart people running this front office. Breidich has been with the team for a decade. He's an Ivy League guy. And so I get the idea of, you know, improve that outfield defense, because it's a big outfield. Get guys who are really secure in their fastballs, like McGee, Motti, Jason Mott, and Chad Qualls. Maybe the moves, you know, I might not have made those moves, but I understand it. That is a plan. I think it's a plan that can work. The question is whether they have the right personnel. I don't know that they do. It's kind of hard for me to look at the team right now and say it's more than a 500 team at best, but that doesn't mean that they are not trying to approach this from a new angle, I guess is the takeaway.
Yeah, you had an article from back in late January about over the last 2 years, the two guys who have used their fastball most often are Jason Mott and Jake McGee, and now they are currently on the Colorado Rockies. So we've seen around the MLB that the back end of the bullpen, they're trying to move from the back end to the front, kind of like the Kansas City Royals model. I mean, is that how they have to try to work this? They tried the sinker baller for a while with the Aaron Cooks of the world, the changeup guys with Jeff Francis has gotten mixed results for that matter. But is this the way that can possibly the Rockies can get a pitching staff that doesn't automatically implode upon themselves like the House of the Usher at Coors Field?
You know, I think so. And I think that's obviously a strategy that works for every team. I don't think that's specific to Coors Field, but I think it's probably more important for the Rockies because, you know, they got a lot of heat last year for their rotation not going deep into games. And obviously part of that was injury. Part of that was ineffectiveness. But also I think part of it is it's not a strategy you want. I don't know that I want somebody in Coors Field going through the lineup the third time or the fourth time. It's just it's a recipe for disaster. So while it's kind of contrary to popular belief, if you have a really strong bullpen, you get guys, you know, through the lineup twice, and then you bring in a fastball reliever, a fresh arm who can throw it hard, throw it straight, who's not going to worry about not having their breaking pitch. Again, do they have the right personnel? I don't know, but I do like the strategy. I think it's a strategy that can work.
Well, and I think the interesting thing about it is the Rockies have tried so many different things. This is sort of the one thing that they haven't tried. I mean, they've gone through eras where they've tried to acquire a lot of speedy guys to cover ground in the outfield. And they're going to make a lot of contact, steal bases, and defend well. That was sort of the early 2000s model. Obviously, they had the Blake Street Bombers. Pitching staff, they've gone, like Anthony said, they went Aaron Cook. They went Jeff Francis. They tried Daryl Kyle. He was kind of the first iteration of that. But they haven't tried just straight heat, guys who can bring a lot of velocity, because you're going to have to be reliant on the fastball. And one of the things that I thought was really interesting that you asked Jeff Breidich was, does it work sort of in counterbalance to the momentum you can gain from acquiring a lot of flamethrowing guys if you're sort of laying out your game plan that you're going to have to throw a lot of fastballs. Do you think they run the risk of opposing lineups knowing they can be a lot more aggressive because of the fact they're probably not going to face guys who are relying on the breaking stuff, maybe save Adam Ottavino? Is there a blowback to this approach of going after guys who really utilize a lot of velocity?
I think that's absolutely the biggest risk. I mean, like, if I knew a 90-mile-an-hour fastball was coming, I could probably make contact with it. And I'm in no way a professional athlete. I think if an actual big league hitter was pretty sure a fastball is coming, they're going to hit it all over the park. And so that is kind of the counterbalance. It's like you have to have guys who are not only good with their fastball, but guys who can really hit their spots well. And I think that's why they like Mott and why they like McGee, because, you know, that's their entire game. And so I think that's a risk. But, you know, if there's any team in baseball or any team in professional sports that should be trying something outside the box, it's the Colorado Rockies. I mean, they absolutely should be the team that tries something different. You look at them a couple years ago when they did the four-man rotation thing. I thought it was a great idea. I just thought the execution was a little flawed. You even had Dan O'Dowd on TV a couple weeks ago saying, you know, maybe we shouldn't have tried that in the middle of the season. Maybe we should have done that, you know, over the winter, which I totally agreed with. It's kind of tough to say in June we're going to start doing that, but it's a great idea. It's the kind of you know, outside the box thought that this team should absolutely be doing, and I think the heavy fastball approach kind of plays into that.
Yeah, and we saw what the Rockies have been trying to acquire since Breidich took over. Obviously, they took John Gray, the number third overall. When they traded Troy Tulowitzki, they went out and got Jeff Hoffman. They got Miguel Castro. They got Jesus Sinoco, guys who can fire it up there. So I guess the question is what we are going to see from John Gray and Jeff Hoffman this year. Do you think Gray, who is in some people's eyes taking a step or two backwards in his prospects status, and what do you think he'll do this year at Coors Field? And then with Jeff Hoffman, do you think he can make an impact if he gets another year, or at least another half year under his belt in the minor leagues coming back from Tommy John surgery?
You know what worries me about John Gray is I like the stuff and I like the skills and everything, but he's said in the papers that he's worried about pitching at Coors Field, right? Like it's gotten in his head a little bit. And I think that's the scariest part, is if you go up there, this isn't the right term for it, but like pitching scared, and obviously that's not the right term, I know he's not scared, but if you have that in your head, like, how am I going to beat Coors Field? It's going to beat you. And I think that's what worries me. So he's got to get a little bit of success going on up there kind of quickly, I think, or I don't know that it's ever going to happen. So that's a big concern, because a big part of the future of the Rockies is built around him. I still think he can succeed, but you look at like Eddie Butler, he was a big guy too, and I'm kind of down on him. Hoffman I like a lot. You know, it's hard to say until you actually see him at altitude, but he's absolutely the right kind of guy to target. And you know, I think the Tulo deal didn't get a lot of positive press, but I think that's because Hoffman was injured at the time, and I think he is still a guy that they can really count on. I mean, I do like this group of arms they got coming up. It's just kind of a crapshoot until you sort of see what they do in the big leagues at altitude.
Mike, last thing for you. We'll get you out of here. We know you got a chatty little 5-month-old behind you. There is and I have airport announcements behind me, so we've got a very well-rounded podcast today.
I've got a nice quiet room here, guys. So.
This is something that's been really cool, though, is reading your stuff, hearing Jeff Breidich on the StatCast. Jeff Sullivan put together a really good piece on Just a Bit Outside a few weeks ago about kind of the Coors Field hangover and that sort of stuff. Do you think that the advanced stats, the sabermetric community, the really, really good baseball minds in the media, do you think that there is a heightened level of interest right now in what it takes to win in Colorado? Because for so long, for those of us who've lived out here, who followed this team, feels like you're left on an island in large part, in that maybe the front office has not tried things that work, maybe the roster isn't that talented, and there isn't really a baseball media community out here to focus on what it takes to be successful. It feels like, at least from an outsider's perspective, people talk about that more now. Does it feel like that to you, that there's more of an interest now in what it would take to actually make this team successful?
I think so. And I'm glad you brought up Jeff Sullivan. He's great. And he's obviously done a lot of this stuff as well. I can't speak for anybody else, but for myself, the reason is it's interesting, right? If you look at every other situation in baseball, you could talk about the Padres and the Reds and the Marlins in a very similar tone, but there's nothing like this situation. And from someone who's like, the biggest struggle as far as being a writer is, it's not writing, it's finding interesting ideas to write about and not just regurgitating the same stuff constantly. And that's why I always look to Coors Field, because it's something that's so unique. There's nothing like it in professional sports, and it's a puzzle that hasn't really been cracked by anyone yet. And, you know, for myself, that's why I always like to come back to it as much as I can.
It's just not a commitment to winning like the Broncos, if you listen to the Denver media. That's all it takes. You just have to be committed to winning, apparently. Yeah. That solves it all.
You just want to win.
Yeah, they just don't care. Yeah, that's true. 29 teams a year don't want to win.
No, exactly. Not at all. There's no interest in doing that. Mike Petriello is on Twitter. He's at Mike_Petriello. You can follow him there. You can also download the StatCast podcast, which is phenomenal. Tune into that. The Jeff Breidich interview was a few weeks back and was outstanding stuff. And Mike, we cannot thank you enough. All the moving pieces we had to get this one together, and this is fantastic. Thank you so much for the time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks a lot, guys. Take care.
Mike Petriello, huge thanks to him for joining the show today. You can find Mike, he is on Twitter at Mike_Petriello. That's Petriello for those of you who are biased against Italian last names, you jerks. Big thanks to Mike. So we're going to get set to wrap things up, but before we do, some questions to get to from the last couple of weeks over Twitter. We're going to start getting back to regular episodes, by the way. Are you going to spring training this year at all?
I am, actually. I might be heading there in a couple of weeks.
Yes, me too.
The 3rd and 4th of March, I might be there, hopefully. And then also a big bachelor party at the last weekend of March as well in Scottsdale.
Good.
Not
I'm gonna
for
miss
me,
you,
but for a friend.
I'm going to miss you both trips then.
Thank God.
Great, because I'm going the 8th to the 16th. So unwittingly, I planned it around where you would be there, and
of
I'm
course.
Really happy about that.
Now, I've got a lot of basketball, of course. It's, you know, it's March. It's madness. Regular season ends the 5th of March, and then the Big West tournament is the following weekend, and then anything subsequent after that will be icing on the cake.
Our broadcasting careers have taken us in very weird directions.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So anyway, we'll both be in spring training. It doesn't look like we'll do a show together from spring training, but at times through the month of March, don't worry. We'll be around the Cactus League. So let's get to a couple of questions that we received on the old Twitter machine. I don't believe these were even hashtag ask PDP questions. I think we just like kind of started getting.
Well, because we got a lot of weird ask PDP questions last time from Nigeria and France.
Yeah. Oh, France? We had some from France, too.
They got the new Ask PDP. It was, it was some weird stuff. It was even weirder than the Nigerian freedom movement stuff.
Oh, yeah. Nigerian democracy, Ask PDP thing. The French thing was that at Podcast de Pub.
Yeah, that's right.
Whatever the hell it was. It was like a YouTube guy who had like a bandage over his head. In his
it was like Ask PewDiePie or whatever.
Anyway, so let's get into it. I think this was Tom Norwood who came up with this question, but again, our apologies to whoever submitted these because I don't really remember who they came from and we can't find them via the hashtag. And I don't want to scroll back that far at our mentions.
Nope.
Who do you think is going to get more? This ties into what we were talking about earlier. Who do you think gets more starts at shortstop this year? I guess right now among the three known or somewhat known commodities is
well, we have
Jose
known
Reyes.
Knowns. We have known unknowns. We have unknown unknowns.
That is a good Donald Rumsfeld drop. Nice job. Christiana Damas, Jose Reyes, Trevor Story.
Oh boy, this is actually a really, really good question.
Yeah, it is. This is a tough one.
Gets more starts at shortstop this year. I am going to go with Trevor Story.
Okay.
I think the Reyes thing will come to a head eventually. I think he will get knocked by MLB for however long. I don't think it matters. But I think by the end of the year, even if it's not at the beginning of the year where Trevor Story gets the majority of starts at shortstop, I think by the end of the season, maybe after a slow first half, I think he will have come on and he will be the everyday starter at shortstop, at least for the next near future, I would say, for the Rockies.
Okay.
So I think Trevor's Story.
I like that.
I think Adamas will be there as a backup guy, but I think if everyone's healthy, I mean, they have Nolan at third. They just re-signed DJ to a 2-year extension. I think with the uncertainty surrounding Jose Reyes, I imagine Trevor Story is going to be number one on the depth chart going into camp considering the Reyes issue. So I think Story will get the first shot, and I think he'll have the last shot as well.
I will, since that's the optimistic thing and that's what I would like to see happen, I'll go very pessimistic and say I think it's going to be Jose Reyes. as a worst case scenario for everyone to be upset about. I mean, it is a presidential election year and everything's pretty much sucks in the world anyway.
Everything sucks. The whole thing, everything sucks. It all sucks.
Yeah, I'm going to say Jose Reyes. He'll come back from a suspension, let's say in June, and he'll be an everyday guy going forward toward the end of the season. Obviously, nobody wants to trade for him. He's really not that good, but that won't prevent him from being in the lineup every day. That'll be my pessimistic take to counter your optimism.
He's got to love toxic assets. That's all you want.
I hope that you are correct, but... I don't think so. Toxic Assets, by the way, is going to be the title of this episode.
Toxic
Assets.
EDP 65, Toxic Assets.
Okay, a follow-up to that question in a similar vein is two-parted. One, who gets the most starts at first base this year? And secondary to that, which is a tweet that we just got in this morning from Andrew. Andrew asked, is first base right now the Rockies' biggest failure in player development because there are no viable candidates there from the system to take over at first base?
Well, I would say that yes. Only considering, besides the one guy they had that was pretty good there for a while. I don't know. What was his name? Was his name Rod? Rod something?
Rod Smelton.
Rod Smelton was pretty good. And he was there for quite a long time. So I think, but that was obviously, he was drafted in a very, very different time, at a different organizational bent. So he started nearly 2,200 games with the Rockies at first base. Andres Galarraga, who was obviously a free agent when the team was expansion team in 1993, started 677 games. Want to guess who's number three on that list of most games started at first base in the Rockies in their history?
Holy cow, this is a really good question. Brad Hopp.
Justin Morneau.
Oh, wow.
175.
Holy cow. Just over one full
season.
Fourth
on that list, Ben Paulson, 106. One who's fifth on that list, Garrett Atkins. One who's sixth, Jordan Pacheco.
My God. Jordan Pacheco was like 5'9". And the Rockies are like, yeah, he's a big target. We'll put him over at first base.
So yeah, just think about that for a second. That, yes, of course, you had Todd Helton there from 1997 to 2013. It was 17 years. You've been around as an organization for not much longer than that. So, of course, yeah, he's going to have the majority of starts. There won't be a lot of guys on that list. But just considering all the prospects that we heard about in the Rockies system when Todd was still playing, whether it was Ryan Sheely, whether it was Joe Koshansky, they were always thought of, oh, the next Helton. Oh, but they're blocked by Todd. Got to trade them for prospects. And it never ended up happening. So... I know. I think there's something to that because they got Todd Helton. They really struck gold with that one. And then I think they were afraid of drafting and scouting too many first basemen when Todd was in his prime or even on his decline.
Right.
Only because, well, if we draft this stud at first base and he's blocked
What's
by Helton, we're not going to trade Todd.
Right.
So what do we do?
Call it the Joe Koshansky rule.
Right.
Or the Ryan Sheely rule.
Yeah, I definitely think there was a bit of an organizational philosophy through that. And then when they realized they were already backloaded, like, oh God, Todd's near the end of his career, we have to start drafting first baseman. There weren't a lot of great ones to be had and none of them fell into them. And the ones they tried didn't really hit.
That's what's kind of funny too.
Ben Paulson, he did well last year, but he took forever to land in the Rockies system.
That's what's kind of funny. The last couple of drafts, the Rockies could have ended up with, had things shaken out differently, Chris Bryant or Kyle Schwarber, both of whom are not forecasted by many people to remain at the positions where they are or where they were drafted. I mean, Kyle Schwarber is not a major league catcher. Chris Bryant is he's been a serviceable third baseman, but a lot of people thought outfield or first base for him. Those could have been guys to come into the system, and man, they just got swiped. I mean, I think the majority of us were happy when Kyle Schwarber ended up going early, but that has not panned out the way we all thought it would on draft day.
Yeah, but imagine Kyle Schwarber in the Coors Field outfield.
Yeah, that's a good point. That is a very good point.
Yeah.
If you can convert him over to first base, maybe that's something, but putting him in the outfield, yeesh.
Yeah. There have been six players in the Rockies' history who have started 100 games or more at first base.
That's ridiculous. That is ridiculous. Yeah. So who then do you think gets the lion's share of time over there this year? Because it's him, it's Ben Paulson, and it's Mark Reynolds, really. I mean, those are the two options right now.
Yeah, but Paulson and Reynolds, I think Paulson will get the lion's share of the chances, only because I think it's going to be more of a platoon.
Yeah.
And I think, Paulson was pretty good against right-handed pitching last year, if I remember correctly. Yeah, he hit 282 with an 815 OPS. Did not do much against lefties, so I imagine they'll have Reynolds in there to mash about 15 dingers against left-handed pitching, play some DH when they go to American League Parks. I think Paulson will get the chance right now because really there aren't a lot of guys ready to step up in Colorado Springs. I did it. Wow. I said Colorado Springs.
Man.
Wow. That's some weird vertigo.
Quarter in the jar.
Yeah, right. In Albuquerque, there's not a lot of first base prospects coming up that are going to be ready in the next 6 months. So I think it's going to be Paulson and Reynolds this year getting the shot. I think Paulson will get maybe 100 or so games at first base this year for starts.
Yeah, I think it'll be Paulson too. Reynolds gives you kind of that Jason Giambi-ish bat off the bench with power and potential, you know, for a big hit late in games if you want to utilize him that way.
Right.
Didn't come in extraordinarily expensive, so you know I don't think you're really crying about that with Mark Reynolds. And so I think, you know, and if Ben Paulson improves his showing, maybe he's not a platoon guy. Maybe you do run him out there more, you know, 2 out of every 3 days, 3 out of every 4 days than what we saw last year.
Yeah, and really, you look at the non-roster invitees for the Rockies spring training camp this year, they're only one infielder is on that list, and that's Ryan McMahon. So, and he's been a guy who's been talked about who could be switched across the diamond from third base to first base. Obviously, there's some guy who's pretty good at third base right now starting for the Rockies. So, and McMahon, if he has a great showing at Double-A this year, I can't see him being in the big leagues this year, but great showing at Double-A this year, gets bumped up to Albuquerque by the end of the season, is they move more to first base, get some good reps there. Who knows? I mean, he might be who we're talking about going to play first base next year for the Rockies, but we'll see. But he's still very, very young. He is only 21 years old, going to be in Double-A this year more than likely. So, yeah, he's got a little ways to go just in terms of maturity, but I think he is somebody right now, even though he's not playing first base for the Rockies right now, that they think he can contribute across the diamond eventually at the big league level.
System rankings and prospect rankings are out from pretty much everybody across Baseball America, Baseball Prospectus, ESPN, and MLB.com. The Rockies, a ton of top 100 prospects. I think the composite ranking basically among the organizations or the outlets that have ranked systems puts the Rockies at basically tied for third, maybe fourth best system in all of baseball. So there is a lot to be excited about in this system going forward. And there is a lot still to kind of shake out for the 2016 season as how this roster will stack up. But we're going to talk about that more as position players report. We're recording this on Thursday, the 18th. So it is a week from today that position players will have their first workout for the Rockies. Salt River Field's a talking stick. And we'll start diving in a lot more heavily into how this roster will look, starting rotation, bullpen, you know, what your lineup looks like, all that kind of stuff. Is the
breakout stars.
Breakout stars. Yeah, we'll do our full season preview, all that stuff as well. Man, this is exciting, finally. This is our third season of this podcast, by the way.
That's bizarre.
I thought I was done ridiculous. With you yeah. for so long. And they pull me back in. Yeah, I guess that's it for this week.
Okay. Well, have fun with the Duke lacrosse team.
Have fun with whatever you're doing. What are you doing?
Cal State Fullerton.
Oh, right. Yeah. The Titans.
Rivalry game, yes.
Titans.
But also college baseball starts this week, too. Titans. I'm not doing any of those games yet. But
These games are at Kennesaw State in Georgia, and I happen to look up their baseball team plays at home tomorrow, so I might just go to the baseball
Go stop by. Yeah, absolutely.
Why not? All right. Till next week.
Or next time. Let's just say next time.
Yeah, next time. Till next time.
Hopefully next week, but definitely until next time.
Yeah. Enjoy the 70-degree weather. Yeah.
We got some stuff coming.
We got some sweet stuff coming.
We got stuff, you guys. Yeah.
We got, it'll blow your mind. We'll get y'all set for opening day.
Stuff that we got.
Get y'all set for opening day and spring training and whatever else have you. Get pumped. There's some really cool stuff on the way from Humble Monster.
Yes, there is.
So be on the lookout for that. Find us on iTunes. Find us on Stitcher. Find us on purpleroad.com. And until next time, enjoy the sunshine here in Denver. We'll talk to you then. Bye.
Bye. That's funny. That's funny. Look who's not on time once again. Yeah. You're right there, Sport?
Oh, hello.
Oh, hi.
What's up?